Here's to you, dear listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Metal Gear Monday's Revengeance, where you'll find your favorite conversations around Metal Gear and Kojima-related content delivered to you through tactical podcast action. I'm your host, Warren Minix, and with me, as always, in alphabetical order by last name, someone who needs to be on this podcast, but it's because she only knows how to fly the plane. Miss Tori Cortez, how we doing?
Oh, and here I was thinking you liked me or something.
In the cutscene, and it makes more sense, though, I promise. Oh, my God. And
no,
we also
That was my response in kind.
Oh, well done. Well, with us, as always, the milkman himself, Mr. Chris Hampton. How we doing?
You know, I'm here. It's been a long week, let me just say.
Dude, I'm with you.
Did you bring your milk?
No, I actually am out of milk. I got to go to the grocery store this weekend and pick some up.
I demand.
I know.
Milk.
Yeah. It's not very milkman of you, Chris.
Well, Listen, I just sell it. I'm a milk hawker. I hawk
milk. Milk slinger?
Yeah, I sling the milk at the milk bar.
He doesn't try the product.
Right? Yeah, I don't.
Oh,
I don't get high.
On
no,
your own
not
supply.
Unless it's lactose free, because it messes with my stomach. I'm lactose intolerant.
Oh, look at you. Okay.
But I'll devour a whole carton of ice cream.
Damn right you
will. What?
Yeah.
That's the same product, Chris.
You know, I don't care. I love ice cream.
You know they make dairy free ice cream, Chris, right?
I know, but it just don't taste the same.
It's not the same, Tori.
Yeah, it's not
the same.
Okay,
I mean,
Warren.
Some of it's very good. If you get like, the coconut ice cream with pineapple or something that tastes good with coconut, it can be better.
But guess what else they make it with?
What?
Almond milk.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, shit.
They also have a dairy-free Ben & Jerry's Cherry Garcia.
Why don't they? Here's a question, you know. That candy bar and Almond Joy? Why don't they
Correct.
Make Almond Joy ice cream made out of almond ice cream?
Why the fuck don't they?
I don't
That's
know.
That's a great question.
This is
one hell of an intro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almond Joy, get your shit together.
You know, call me.
MGMR.
And then sponsor us. Yeah.
Call
yeah.
me and we'll work this
Brought
out.
Brought to you by.
I got other ideas too.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
We got
I totally.
All kinds of shit.
I totally shouted out brand name there. We should cut that.
Ooh.
Blickety blick.
Blen and Blary's.
Glen Gary.
Great
so
value
we get started, it's been a long night if anybody wants to know.
Oh, shit.
So today we're going to talk the final bits of the story of Metal Gear Solid 3. We're going to get out of that sorrow fight. We're going to go all the way through the end of the game, and then the second ending of the game, and then the third ending of the game. Before we get started, Chris, is there anything you'd like to bring up at the top of the episode outside of amazing ice cream ideas?
Yeah, I got a problem with you fucking people. No, I'm kidding.
Cool energy at the top.
Yeah, right? Yeah, this is going great.
I just want to give a shout out to Matt, as always, our audio editor. I see on Spotify you dropped a single as we're recording this on the 28th, but you know, maybe by October there'll be an album out. I don't know. I don't know anything about that. If I'm wrong about it, Matt, you can just cut that out, I guess. Sorry to create more work for you. let's see. I think also there's this kid on YouTube, right? What's his name? Tori.
Oh, man. You're going to put us on the spot.
Encoxis?
Encoxis.
Encoxis.
I believe that's what it is.
Hey, man, you're undoubtedly hearing this on YouTube, and sorry for butchering your name, but you have been a delight
be
to talk
another
to.
Another one of your cringe moments, bud.
Oh, yeah. We're the freaking best at those.
But I'll tell you two things. You know, I'm from East Tennessee, so I'm allowed to mispronounce everything. And two, I don't know that this show is age appropriate for you, young man. We get pretty explicative here.
Oh, but we're not gonna rat him out.
A permission right. slip? Do we need this for like legal protection?
Enacaus. Enacaus.
Enacaus.
Thank you, Warren. Enacaus.
Yes. And he does have his own YouTube channel. So.
Yeah, check his YouTube channel out.
I love finding
new people
that listen to us through so many different channels. It's the best.
Yeah. So Inakos has been the only vocal person on our YouTube channel, I think, as of late. And
ever.
It's been, maybe ever. It's been a treat to read through those comments and chat with you. So keep it up. We like hearing from you.
Yeah, man. Email in too. Whatever you want to do. Go to contact at Metal Gear Mondays. Do we want to do our mystery Patreon?
Well, sure. I'd love to. Before I get to that, too, I just want to... I know this is kind of beside the point of what I'm about to do right now, but I do want to shout out just a few other people that are in our Discord because they were on a voice call with me throughout this entire last bit of the game and often helping me with strats. So thank you, Mr. Toby, Mr. Killer Seymour, and Mr. Alex H. Without your help... yesterday would have been a much longer day. So, what's up, guys? All right, now time for my favorite segment.
Oh, yes.
What's that?
Oh, babbling brook.
Sorry, I'm getting chased by a paraplegic tank.
Yes. We're returning the segment of Chris playing the game while recording.
Yes, yes. See, that plus the soothing sounds of, especially for Chris this time.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, beautiful. Wonderful. So calm. So serene.
How's it going for you, Chris?
Well, I did a power slide, Tokyo Drift, off this cliff.
Yeah.
and we're trying to cross this bridge, but if memory serves correct... we're not going to be able to get across this bridge without some incident.
It's a real struggle.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear about future troubles that we will all talk about.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I know all the patrons are just on the edge of their seats. So without further ado, I'd like to happily announce that once I find this person's name, Mr. Mitch Hines is the patron of the week.
Hey, shout out Mitch.
And Mitch Hines has been a patron with us for, let's see, about the last year and a half or so.
Wow. Thanks, man.
So thank you, sir, for staying on board. It's been a fun ride, I think, and hopefully all of you agree. Here's our shameless plug. If you're not currently a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/Metal Gear Mondays. And as low as $1 a month gets you access to our Discord, where a lot of fun things are happening. So please come join us. And yeah, that's it.
Sweet. And then I'll remind everybody as well, as we are winding down the story of MGS3, we will be doing a listener response episode at the end of the season. So by the time you guys hear this, hopefully... we have a few in by this point. We've been trying to get people to understand that we're going to be doing this at the end of the season. So that way, if you have anything you want to talk about Metal Gear related, ideally Metal Gear Solid 3, maybe if you want to ask some questions about the next thing we're doing for the show, you know, this is the time to do it. And this way we can, you know, get a little engagement going, even if you're not necessarily part of the Patreon, even though we absolutely recommend it. You guys ready to move on with the game?
Yeah, where are we?
In the game?
Yeah.
So we are, we have now woken up in the middle of the river. So we basically finished the boss fight, but we have not gotten out of the sorrow. Now, what's very interesting about this, I love the lines you hear when we talk about this. So you're waking up and the dialogue is, boss, you have to shoot me. The spirit of the warrior will always be with you. Do not be sad. We will meet again someday. So in our boss episode, we talked about how the boss had to kill the sorrow. They make reference to this at the end of the boss fight, which is pretty cool. So I appreciate that. You wake up, you are drowning, and you're swimming to the top, You get out, and you find yourself just on the bank of the river, and you are feeling real good. You gather your breath. You got your codec going in your ear, but I do love the shot of the forest with him on his knees. So Snake is just like basically he's been through the ringer at this point. A little bit of a platoon shot, if you guys know that like famous shot of Behringer and platoon. It kind of looked like that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. This is a very tranquil moment in
yes.
the game, which is an interesting thing because that's actually what the name of this area means.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
Nice segue,
see, I'm
Chris.
These fucking segues. You know? So,
that's awesome, man.
I'm not always cringe, but yeah. So
I should not have told you that.
I'll give you my bad Russian lesson real quick. And this area is called Tikhorny, and that means tranquil mountain, according to the wiki. But that's a little incorrect. So Tiko means like under one's breath or quiet. So quiet Ooh. Mountain would be a more accurate thing. But
Ooh.
I also found that like Tiko can also be translated to doggo. And
Aww, that's
in
so
English,
cute.
Yeah, but it is cute. But in English, like doggo is a real word that means to remain motionless and quiet to escape detection.
Apt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Really,
I just think it's very interesting how all these words kind of interact together to kind of really get the sense of what the game is about. It shows a lot of thought, I think, in the writing of this game. And I think it exemplifies why it stands out as like one of the better in the series, for sure.
Right. Well, this team certainly. Of people has been good at adding little Easter eggs of all sorts like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not altogether surprising that they're hiding little things here and there in the titles they give you. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think like when this game is being made, this was like one of the first times where people who were working on making a Metal Gear game were like people who played and were fans of Metal Gear Solid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely. I could see that timeline making a lot of sense. So our codec is ringing. Zero chimes in, and you have a pretty good chat where he slides Sigint in to basically throw the bomb on you, because we made a mention in the last episode of how come no one talks about the Sorrow, except for the Fury that one time, and maybe the boss will drop it here and there. We learn that the Sorrow was a Cobra unit member, but he died 2 years ago, which is like a, oh, shit, right?
Yeah.
And we know it. So, like, we, this group here, and we've all played it before, but I remember my first time playing, trying to process what the hell that even meant. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so there's a dead guy, and I just won the fight. It seemed a little, it was a weird pace thing, but it definitely let me, like, I was thrown for a loop a little bit. I was like, shit, this game is a little bit more than a bunch of boss fights.
That's interesting, because everything, well, it's hard for me to put myself back in, like, 12-year-old brain, I guess, is how old I might have been. But I think everything up until that point, to me, pointed to this guy's a ghost. Like, you only see him when you're looking in first-person mode through Snake's eyes, and when it's raining, and, you know, the crying blood business, or the raining blood mm-hmm. business. Like, all signs pointed to, I don't know, supernatural or just, you know,
sure.
not alive
oh,
in
yeah.
general.
And Snake's got that great line of, like, looks like it's not time for me to die yet.
Hell yeah.
Okay. That's pretty, like, as we keep going through this, this becomes more and more of, like, not a generic action movie, but, like, all the things you want to hear in an action movie are going to start happening a lot in
Your
this,
James
like,
Bond
last
lines.
Couple hours. Yeah. So you end up having a conversation with Eva as well. She basically says, hey, if you meet me up at the river all the way up north and meet me behind the waterfall. Now, if we talked about this correctly, Tori, you should have had a very difficult time getting there versus Chris and myself, because apparently
oh, yeah?
if you don't have the transmitter on you, there's no guards here. If you have the transmitter in you, the guards know you're there, so you have
oh,
to dodge Gru soldiers to get behind the waterfall.
Oh, well, I did have a certain time getting there. Yeah, it wasn't more any more difficult than clearing other areas full of guards, but okay, I didn't know that not everybody had to face guards here.
Mm-mm. Wait, You face guards.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that
because
that's really
she left the transmitter
then.
In from the prison cell. Yeah,
that is really interesting because of the to remain motionless and quiet to escape detection word meaning right. of the area too. So it's like a double meaning. It can be two different experiences.
Sneaky. Oh my god! I had no idea this was.
Oh my god.
A divergent path for people. I have, yeah, I think cool, I've right? always left it in because that cheeky little cutscene that we're going to talk about here in a minute just always there, amused yeah. me enough.
Oh, definitely. So, yeah, so we find our way through. Like I said, for Chris and I, it was a very simple walk, basically follow the river so you know where to get there. You get behind the waterfall, and Eva is there to meet you. She has all your gear. You are, you know, beat to hell. So we're going to get a fire going. Let's get you rested. Let's get some food in you. And this particular cutscene, at least what I put in the notes here, is by this point now, by this cutscene, I am fully invested that Eva is actually, like, I'm in. Eva would have definitely gotten me over at this point in the game.
Yeah.
So I actually really appreciate the dialogue they have. Like, it actually feels, you know, it's silly end of action movie, almost like, man, almost got a lot, you know, like that kind of stupid stuff that happens. But they have like some really good dialogue about what are we going to do after the mission's over? Let's have some sushi. And they're laughing about, he's like, oh, you know, that's perfect for survival training because it's raw fish. You know, like mm-hmm. it's just, it's cheesy, it's dumb. But I mean, they get a little, you know, she's completely in her little bathing suit. She does like the little, on all fours crawl towards you, very sexy, and she goes in, they go in for the moment, and they have like a kiss, like a it feels like a pretty genuine mutual kiss.
So if I could jump in here at this moment,
oh, yeah, please
and
do.
Expand upon this a little bit and just kind of piggyback off of you, this is a turning point for both people at this point in the story too, because mm-hmm. Snake up until this point has been very very reluctant to trust her. And it's not that he sheds that distrust that is so natural to him. It's that he just lets it give a little. He lets a little bit of his walls down. And the turning point for Eva, I think, is that this man has just sacrificed himself in order that she might sure. not get hurt. So she's feeling a lot of things in this moment. One, grateful that she's still alive, I'm sure. Two, a little bit guilty that he's lost his eye. And three, just really vulnerable in general at this point. So this is like real cutscene.
The music, that crescendo when they're like having their little embrace.
Right.
Like I was like, oh, okay, we're DTFing right now. It's getting, we're going to watch a sex scene.
Yeah, you would.
Like I really thought that's what was going to happen. Hey, come on. I wasn't 12, all right? I was a little older than that, all right? But I do love, like, again, he's eating snake. You know, they're talking about it. And they have that moment, right? And then he kind of does, like, he pushes back, like, oh, that's never happened to me before. You know, like, that kind of a thing. But he's talking about how he's still got one good eye.
He's a virgin, right?
Yeah, like, he has to be. I even if he isn't, he still doesn't know what it's like to have a hot chick, like, be into you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, but clearly. He doesn't know what to do with that. She's not a gun, so he has no idea what to do. Now, I didn't get the transmitter sequence, so Tori, would you like to go into it? Like I said, I'm familiar with the sequence, but you were the one that actually got it in the game.
Yeah, sure. It's nothing too special or involved or anything. It's just in between that really real moment we were just talking about and the moment when they're all dressed and talking about what's coming next. If you haven't taken out the transmitter up to this point, the cutscene that follows will be Eva walking up to you and saying, Snake, what's that on your back? And he's just like eating some snake and she just goes into this very aggressive, like, oh, I gotta figure this out. And she'll be talking about, oh my God, why is it so hard? And, you know, wow, it looks a lot bigger than before or whatever, you know, just
yeah, it's B-roll from an Austin Powers film.
Stupid little innuendo here and there. And then in between all of these lines, you'll see some silhouetted shadows of what looks like a very intense boxing match / sex fest, perhaps.
Yeah, she's like flipping him upside down or like cracking his back or something. It's don't know. It is a great scene, and I forgot all about it when you mentioned it. I was like, shit, I fucking took the damn transmitter out.
Like I said, it's not... I don't know. I often feel very shameful at indulging in moments like this. They're very much Kojima.
Well, we're going to keep going, and there's not going to be as many fun... It's going to get sad pretty soon as we keep going here. Yeah. Chris, do you have anything special outside with just that? I know, like I said, you and I shared the... We didn't have the cutscene or anything like that, but is there anything you feel with like their moment? Did you believe it? Did it seem like she was still playing you or?
No, I mean, I got the sense that like while Snake didn't really exactly trust her, what he did is he respected her, you know, as a, as a professional, you know? And I think that, you know, you can like somebody and have feelings for them and respect them in a professional sense and not necessarily trust them to have your interests in mind.
Right. You know? And not bang them in a tunnel behind a waterfall. Right.
Yeah.
Got it.
And I think that, like, you know, Snake's a professional too. Like, he realizes this is like the nature of his business and he doesn't necessarily take it personally that
right.
That's how it shakes out.
Right.
Sure. But, yeah, no, I think if we're just like leaving the waterfall area, I will say that you just better grab those mushrooms you see because you need them later.
Mm. We'll talk about that because I did not grab the mushrooms.
Warren.
I know, I'm sorry. I was too busy with Eva, okay?
I didn't have time for mushrooms. I get it. 12-year-old me gets it.
Yeah, 20-year-old Warren was all about that scene. So you get a key and you basically just find out, oh, well, it's a secret entrance basically behind the waterfall to get back into Groznygrad. So other than having that really beautiful moment and she finally shows that she's got a button cam. So she's still like, even though she was like ready to get down, she still is like, yeah, well, I got to have insurance because if you're going to double cross me, I got you, you know, very clever. That's why she's the best spy in this game. So... We are on our way back.
The best spy in this game.
Almost, you're right. We'll get, once we get to the end. So we have our tunnel. Very straightforward. There is a bunch of gear here. You can get all kinds of bullets, silencers, everything you need basically for every type of gun that you would probably use. And we find our way back to Groznygrad. I actually like this a lot because they sort of like doubled down on their security because of what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more where normally there might be two or three people. You have like four in a corner and then two that are walking and then two more still staying like off to the side by a door.
And then like a squadron of four or so that's running drills.
Yes. Oh, that's, yeah, I love that where you just try to sneak right behind them and just hope that they don't see you.
Right. So nerve-wracking.
Yeah. But that's what the Sorrows, the silent armor that you get, and it's just in your inventory, which you're right, Chris. It's just in your inventory. If you wear it, they can't hear you.
It's like you
running
just
across
like
Groznygrad.
Places it in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never once seen this.
Oh, it's so good. It's not very good at camo. Like, it's really not, but they cannot hear you. So if they are not in your eyesight, you'll never draw their attention, which is really cool, especially in this situation where they're all busy doing their thing. So if you have an idea of where they're looking or going, you can just get right out of there, which is fantastic. We're heading back up. We know where we're going. We're going back to where we are because we have to get to the weapons lab. Did you guys grab more than just the maintenance uniform to sneak in and out of this place?
Oh my fucking God.
Man, I didn't even find it. I knew that it was a thing I should be looking for, but I couldn't tell you where it was.
So it is in the locker room.
Yeah, it's in the locker that you stuff Raiden in.
God damn it. I tried to open Rykov, that door, sorry. Too.
Rykov, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's also a sneaking suit in the same locker room.
Yeah.
And I have to play this game again.
Yeah, it's like a black and orange counterpart to Boss's white and gray.
Ooh.
And it's awesome. And it's really good for some of these fights because basically it's like less stamina and less damage. So it's all, everything reduces. And it's really funny too, because you're playing and it's got like the CCCP, like that's your badge. It's really good though. And it looks dope. Like it looks really cool.
Son of a bitch. I could have saved myself so much headache by just being more observant.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's that late stage in the game of take the time. You don't need it, right? It's not required, but it makes your life so much easier where you can act like you're one of the maintenance guys, but all you have to do is check one more corner of the room and you also get something that's useful for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Noted.
Noted. For a third playthrough.
That's the thing I think that I really like about this series as a whole is that it rewards diligence.
Yes. Sure. Quite.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was a locked locker before as well. So when you were in there with Rykov before, it was one of the ones that wouldn't open.
Okay,
and now
so
it does.
Just always check 100% of lockers.
Yes. Final Fantasy VII trained me. It was in Midgar. One of those lockers that are locked and it ends up being Catchy's ultimate weapon later in the game.
Mm. Well, so, even the locked ones you can kick in and sometimes there's a little nugget for you. Sometimes.
Oh, that's true. Sometimes. Rarely, but it's still worth it. So you didn't have the maintenance uniform, Tori?
Nope.
So you were just extra sneaky?
I was super duper bad at being sneaky.
So when you have the maintenance gear on, it is almost embarrassing how dumb the guards are. Like, you can run and flip and do whatever the hell you want. And basically, so there's a codec call where Sigyn walks you through. Hey, you got to take the C3. And it was really cute. Eva makes it into a little heart for you, right? So you have your C3, this cutting-edge explosive that you can mold and put wherever you need it. And
do you mean that cutting-edge plastic explosive?
C3. You mean that cutting-edge plastic explosive.
And so I love the perspective that we have on it. It's like, oh, well, we know about C4, so like...
It's one better. It's one better than C3.
How quaint.
God, Snake, that's so C3. Last year.
Yeah. It is timely, though, because C3 was actually the proper name for it. It was not C4 in the 60s, or at least in the early 60s. So you're right. So Sigyn basically tells you, hey, you got 4 fuel tanks in there. You got to blow them all up. That should be enough to basically level the weapons lab and the Shagohod, everything, all in one shot. So you have enough C4 to handle that. And in the maintenance suit, though, you can just run, you can flip, you can do whatever you want. The guards don't even look at you, at least in my playthrough. I was not worried at all. I was so focused on like walking like a regular maintenance guy. And then I like flipped over the rail in front of a guard and he was just like, what's up? Just maintenancing? All right, you do you. Guy with a fucking eye patch and a bandana on with a maintenance uniform on. But it worked. So, but you put on, you know, you stick your little C4, C3 on each one of them. Did anybody have any trouble finding them, putting any C3 down? Like, I was very worried about the beeps. Because it was like, meep, meep, meep. You can hear, like, the detonator going. I was like, shit, am I going to get caught because of the beeps, you know?
I don't know if I ever paid that much attention. I was just going to say that I only had trouble with the last one. Of course, that doesn't help you guys because you can go at them in any order, as it turns out. I think it's the only one that's on a different level that you have to go up the stairs to get. I always forget where that one is, and it always takes me a good long while to figure out.
Especially if you have to like pay attention to the guards because there's like 2 or 3 that can actually see you.
Right.
If you're, you know, not able to just blend in. And when you're halfway through dropping the C3, Eva chimes in and says, hey, I'm wiring up the bridge to blow. So we got our escape route. We can keep everybody from chasing us out. Keep doing your thing. And then we get to the final one. And Chris, we make our cool little butterfly. We throw it in the air.
Yeah, like what is this?
You know, our action movie.
Why a butterfly?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Like
I thought maybe it was a moth. Right? Like, because they do like that shot. There's a couple times there's moths in the game, and I thought maybe it had a reference, but there was nothing I could find as to why that symbol. But it is really funny where he's got the gotcha and pops it right on there. Like, but then, you think the battle is won, and you hear fucking Volgan and Ocelot and the boss are all there. And the boss is pretty annoyed with you. Why'd you come back here, right? And
she's
actually
like, stay away, right?
Yeah. And it looks so cool when you're wearing the sneaking suit and she's wearing the sneaking suit. It just looks cool. I love seeing those fights now. But yeah, so you've been caught. And Eva, we find out that Eva was sneaking around in the vault because we learned through the Bond villain montage of Volgen where the Philosopher's Legacy was. And Eva actually broke in and actually had it on her. Like, she's really good, man. I don't get it. And I guess Volgen found out that it was her because Ocelot could smell it on her. And it wasn't the perfume.
Mm.
What was it, Chris?
I don't remember.
Psst. Psst, Chris.
Yeah.
Chris.
Yeah.
It was gasoline.
Gasoline. Oh, yeah. Gasoline. Okay, it was gasoline.
Oh, right. Motorcycle gasoline. Yes, yeah. Yes. So,
oh, yeah, because she's all Moped Mary, right?
Yeah, yeah. She's Moped Mary. Yep.
Yeah.
So she is just laid out. And Volgen's all, you know. I got to say, though, when she does her moment of, like, she's calling him out, right? And she's trying to bring out her little kiss of death. And she's like, you son of a bitch, you know, tries to shoot him. He, like, shocks her, and he literally says, you dirty whore.
Oh, my God.
I was like, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, that's some slut shaming. That would not fly.
For real.
Yeah, 2020, Volgen would not do well, guys.
Like, bruh.
Really just not.
Tone it down.
Not very aware, yeah. But he does have a pretty good line of so beautiful yet so deadly. That's a pretty good line.
Quite.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you get Snake going, what is the Philosopher's Legacy? And oh boy, we learn everything that we didn't know about the Philosopher's Legacy.
This is like when you ask your friend that's like really into a hobby that you are kind of trying to decide, is this something that I would like to be into? And you just want to know more about it. And they give you way too much information.
Yeah.
It's also that classic villain thing. Like, yes, I had planned to kill you, but first I will tell you the entire plan.
Oh my God. It's crazy how he does. And yeah, Chris, I was going to say, it's like, I want to listen to like Guided by Voices. And you're like, here's 37 albums right now. Listen to them all. And you're like, you know what? I'm good. I think I'm good on them for now. I'm going to get back to that. But basically we learn that it's a shit fuck ton of money and a world amassed amount of money through slush funds and all the stuff that's been going on. And then we get a lot of exposition about Volgen's dad, which we talked about in the baddies episode, where Volgen's dad was one of the overseers of these funds and he inherited them almost like kind of illegally, I guess, like, so even for their motto.
Volgen's dad was a hedge fund manager. Is that it?
I guess so. Yeah. He would get your stuff to the Cayman Islands, push it back, right? Lord. Hugh Jackman would hack in. And so, which is fine, I guess. But it's very interesting after you get all this exposition, which, again, we've talked the Philosopher's Legacy pretty far, and we'll get more into it as the rest of the game goes on.
Volgen was also a philosopher's kid, though, right? His dad was a philosopher. I thought I remembered him saying that.
I guess it is true. I don't know if he's... I always felt like he was like the money guy rather than a true philosopher, but I guess it still adds up, right?
So well, whoever's, I mean, handling the money is probably still part of it. Philosopher's son. Or do you mean right. His dad?
His dad, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
So, okay. But he must be since he's a philosopher's son. But again, however he obtained it, is he shouldn't have gotten it. At least all in one sitting. Which also does explain why a lot of his stuff is so shoot from the hip, because he probably is doing everything he can to keep this money, protect it. He says he built Groznygrad with it. Like, that's how he's doing all the Shagohod business. And I couldn't believe it, but he literally takes the microfilm and just gives it to the boss. Like, take care of this.
Dude, right?
Like, what?
I couldn't see to it, and this that was, this is safe.
Right, and it's after just like, we've really, seen bro? The boss and Eva, like, make, like, I got you, bro. Yeah, I got you, bro. Like, they've done that a couple times now, and you're like, holy shit, like, this is crazy. And then this is where we get eye contact with boss and Ocelot again. So, like, are they in cahoots? Because they are like, this Volgen guy sucks, and I got the philosophy. You know, it's just very interesting. There's so much of that, this kind of shit going on, and I think
we
it's
do
just
learn here in a little bit that Ocelot and the boss are, in fact, in a little bit of cahoots at this point.
There's some collusion. There's some collusion there. I can taste it. And so Volgan, we're gonna do a boss fight. He basically calls you out and is like, let's do this. And Volgan goes like all Super Saiyan, flexes his muscles so hard that he has no more clothes, but like that, I guess he's got like some sort of like a resistance suit or something. It looks like just like this cool ass, like I thought his boots were like on the outside of his uniform, but he's got a whole body suit that is the color of the, like that red boot. And then he's just got like bandoliers of fucking bullets all over him. Like he looks kind of badass.
It looks kind of like he's wearing an early version of the skull suit that Raiden will later wear.
Yeah. Okay.
It looks like it might be the same material or something close to it.
I like that. And then Snake and Ocelot, they sort of have a moment, and he gives you like your gun and your knife to be like, all right, because a fist fight with Volgan, there's no way, because Volgan has guns for hands, basically, with his little punching with bullets thing.
It's a knife fight and a gun fight.
And they basically have a 5-minute timer?
Mm-hmm.
You got to fuck big guy up or, you know, explode. You're up Schitt's Creek. Yeah. So based on our pre-show here, I did not have any struggle with this fight at all. And I don't have to go last, but I get the feeling that I'm the only one that really feels that way.
You should go first then, motherfucker.
Okay, then I will go first then. So I remember I brought it up in a previous show where I used to struggle like a motherfucker at Volgan. At least as far as using like the Mark 22, right? Like actually knocking him out, not just, shooting whatever you can at him. And I was able to sort of dodge him whenever he wasn't covered in electricity, slam him to the ground. That would take a little bit of stamina away, and then I could pop him twice in his back and then rinse and repeat, I think like 4 times, and it really wasn't that much of a struggle. Now, it's obvious that...
Sorry, what weapon did you use?
The Mark 22.
Oh, that's what... Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
I straight up, I wanted to get the Cold War camo.
Okay, nice.
And it took me 2 tries to like get the rhythm down, but by the time I did, it wasn't that hard to dodge his stuff. I was able to jump when I needed to, duck when I needed to, move to the left or right when I needed to. Nice. I got hit like maybe twice, and he definitely punched me like a real good punch, and I forgot that it really is like you're getting shot. Like he's punching you and you have to dig the bullet out. And
for sure.
It's fucking shitty. But I really didn't struggle with it. So how did you guys do with this boss fight?
Y'all heard how I did.
Yeah.
Chris, do you want to go first or should I take it?
Yeah, I guess I could say a few words here about...
Chris has got the strats as well.
Colonel Volgan. Yeah, this piece of shit. So
he's the real motherfucker.
I had some trouble until I figured it out. You put on the Rykov mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll stop and he'll be like, Ivan, is that you?
Wow.
Right? But it changes the fight a little bit because when you are, if you engage, it only works once, right? So when he like charges at you and you do the CQC to throw him on the ground and then shoot him in the face with a shotgun, if you miss and he attacks you, instead of doing like a normal punch, he'll grab your balls and squeeze them until you vomit.
I think he did do that to me once, actually.
Yeah, he did.
Holy shit.
I think he did.
Oh, so he just does that regardless. He's just he just grabs him. He grabs
not
him
necessarily
like someone else.
Because I was wearing the Rykov mask for a while after I just didn't stop to take it off after he discovered the scheme. Mm, right?
Yeah.
So that very well could have been it, but I do know that he made me vomit a couple times.
That's
not
insane.
not me the player, but Snake. Right.
Yeah.
I remember.
But also, he made me vomit a little in my mouth.
You were just sitting there, like, vomiting on yourself.
Must carry on.
So, we get halfway through the stamina, and we learn that motherfucker's got a phase 2. That little cutscene, I fucking love all the looks that Vulgan gives Ocelot. Is so good. Like how like in awe that he is that Ocelot calls him Vulgan. And Vulcan. He's like, what? Like, he couldn't believe that he wasn't called Colonel, right?
Yeah.
And I love it. Whose side are you on? Right? Like, I love that shit.
Dude, yeah. So he says that later in phase two as well. Mm-hmm. And you can pop a shot at him while he's saying that. That Ocelot distracts him. It's so good. Yeah, like,
Ocelot wants you to win because fuck Vulcan. And maybe I'll turn. So phase two of the fight. I do like it's a very interesting fight. It feels very not special in comparison to all the other fights we've had, but I do like that. Like he's got the like shock ability, right? Like he can do like a full on like blast of it like across the room. It's not a straight shot. It can sort of arc, and he can like do like a superhero punch the ground, and you have to like jump over and dodge these like moving waves and of electricity.
It's moving kind of like a radar would, right? It just kind of, the little scanner completes its radius. And you have to jump over it, basically.
Yeah, which is great. And I actually dug it, but it was almost the same sort of pattern for me. So it's, if I could, he'd like swing at me a couple times. He was much more aggressive to run and swing at you in phase two. Basically, you dodge that. I could get away and slam him to the ground. And I could straight up mark 22, pop, 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 right? And if he ever swung, I never had to like punch him, but I could if I really wanted to, but it was a lot easier to just throw him on the ground, get him with a couple shots. And he just gets like really angry, but it's rinse and repeat. He is a very straight boss fight.
Okay, yeah. My turn. Because I want to comment on how angry he gets and how that affects phase two of the battle.
Oh, fuck
but
yeah.
But first, I have to let you know that it took me, I only listed 3 attempts, but it took me far more than that, the people in the Discord that I named earlier can attest to, that joined me on my call. So here, I'll just read you my notes exactly as I have them. First attempt, ran out of time, dicked around too much. You really have to murk on this guy to have a chance at beating the timer. And at this point, the frustrations that were brought about during this fight were reminiscent of the Liquid Snake boss battle back in MGS1. Because of the timer more than anything, but also you really have to have your strategy down with this fight.
Sure.
So second attempt, I kind of got my strategy down and I was so close to reaching the end of his health bar before the timer, but just not quite there. And then, for any of you SpongeBob heads, several attempts later, finally made the battle easier for myself by doing it the Chris way.
Oh, yeah.
I went ahead and equipped that shotgun and said, dodge this, you fucker! And it took me a total of 6 shots. That whole battle, 6 shots is what the shotgun requires to take Vulcan down.
Nice. Seems like a small amount of shots, to be honest.
Right? That shotgun, though, man, it does some damage. Yeah.
It's a room clearer.
Yeah, it really does. That's how I navigated this mostly, was using the shotgun.
I know.
We literally mocked the M37 in the pain episode, and I still I haven't even taken it out of, like, maybe I'll equip it later. It hasn't even found its way to be a thought in my weapon.
It's
I can't
so
believe
much fun.
I'm such a one-dimensional player. It's so frustrating because there's so much more for this game, but I'm so 1D.
Years from now, when we decide to revisit this, you're going to have to give it a shot, because I never was one to use all the toys that were given to me, but I will say that I couldn't beat Vulcan without the shotgun. That was like me resigning. Okay, this is how I'm going to do it.
I'm ready. An all shotgun run. I'm ready.
Yeah, man. It worked for Chris. Shoot.
Hell yeah.
That's true. So when I beat him, he collapses on the ground and he drops the Cold War ammo. Like it, shoots out of him. I put on that camo immediately because it's so ridiculous looking, but I fucking love it. Do you know what the Cold War camo does?
No.
No, I have no idea.
So it has no... It's a terrible camo as far as camouflage is concerned. You literally are like half blue, half red, you know, the full CCCP sort of situation going on. But Russian soldiers take a second before they actually fire upon you because you're wearing Cold War camo.
So that's cool.
We're now going to get to a big old scene. Now, we did sort of skip over it. So the boss saves Eva in this situation because
she says,
let me take care of the girl, right? So her and Ocelot have a moment. You see that boss is going to help Eva out. So we know she's okay. And I guess they had a moment while you're getting the shit kicked out of you by Volgan. And we are now ready. Everything's about to explode. So we're getting out of the weapons lab. We're getting out of Groznygrad. Eve is there. She's got, I really felt like Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade because you have the sidecar and everything's about to explode, but we have a chance for just some dialogue about the boss. And Tori, I saw you had notes about this too. Why do they not talk about this on the bike?
Yeah,
don't understand that.
I mean,
I love it, but I just don't get it either. But yeah, go ahead. Here, chime in a little bit on it.
This is just what I wrote in my notes. Bitch, we just said explosives. And the timer's already going down at this point. Like,
right.
If you're lucky, you barely beat the timer in your Volgan fight. So why are you getting off your bike to tell me everything that happened between you and the boss right now?
Right. I love it. I do love it, though, because you do, like, I appreciate the moment, but it is very odd that this is where it felt like maybe after the bike, right? So maybe you would have that
or
talk.
Or like, you know, as you're on the runway, oh, by the way, here's where we're headed.
Yeah. So, Chris, it is Rail Shooter Palooza.
Hell yeah, it is.
We are on a bike, and I will say right now, I felt like Time Crisis all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, so this is an awesome chase scene. It feels like it overstays its welcome a little bit. Like it's a little too long for my liking. But the two big things from this, first off, you look fucking hilarious in the Cold War camo. And you are almost like Captain Morgan, like your one leg is up and your one leg straight. And it's just you sitting there and you're in like a suit. Like it's not camo at all. And you look yeah. so stupid. But it's so funny because you can make it so you're like staring down the barrel of that camera and you're just standing there like, check me out, baby. But the other thing that I didn't know, I forgot about this, that the Shagohod walks with its like those little drill arms.
Kind of.
I totally forgot that it can. I always thought it just drove through things. I keep forgetting that it can actually move those and crawl. Like,
yeah, crawl is the active word here.
It like climbs out of the weapons lab and everything with those arms. And then it a couple times it like lunges at you as opposed to just driving towards you. But
yeah,
I had a great time with this. Like I said, I felt like it overstayed its welcome a little bit. But it is fucking fun. And one thing that's great is every weapon you have is infinite ammo.
Boy, yeah.
I still use the Mark 22, and it's like a one shot, one kill. You hit them in the leg, they're done. And everybody took an extra couple of seconds to shoot me because I was in the Cold War camo. So this was not a hard fight at all. Any of this part was not a struggle at all until we get to, you know, the logical conclusion of what happens here. So, how did this fight go for you guys? I mean, it's screen after screen after screen. It's super action-packed. The music's fucking awesome. But does anybody have anything to add as far as how this moment felt? Because it feels super third act of an action movie.
For sure, yeah. Chris, did you have anything? Because I know I have a few notes here.
Regarding the rail shooting scene, which
yes.
I'm currently doing right now.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, here, let me... you focus on that.
Yeah.
I'll divulge some of my thoughts and then we'll come back to you. Cool?
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
So my favorite thing is naturally Ocelot's involvement in this series of chases and the scene. First and foremost, I love the little piece that he adds to a single action army, which I've been told the name of this so many times. Sorry. For those of you who've told it to me, but
the gun nuts,
this little this little arm he throws on it so he can stabilize his shot better while he's mm-hmm. on his bike. And what I love about this so much is that Eva just pops him like perfectly right in that arm. So you see him kind of like stagger and trying to regain his balance. And it's just, I don't know why that part of the scene gets me every time, but it does. It's just like a really cool little moment of action in the scene. After that, when you get to the part where you're just kind of cutting through Groznygrad, it tickles me a little bit that after I just like mercilessly murder every guard in my path, she is very excited and says, "Keep it up."
Yeah.
And you're just like, "Damn, you stone cold bitch."
Well, I mean, it's not like they're her people, even though they had to talk about, you know, like, how can you spy on your own people?
Right.
But she don't give a fuck.
I know I'm jumping way ahead of myself here, but it reminds me of the Big Mama scene you get later on down the road,
right,
too.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, that's totally true. Totally true.
My big strategy here was because I can use the RPG-7 as much as possible. And I got to tell you guys, it is maybe the most satisfying thing of the game to fire off one of those bad boys at a motorcycle with sidecar and watch those two guards just like fucking fly back.
Flip into oblivion.
Right. so enjoyable. Yeah, and then I don't know. I think my favorite thing about all of that is Ocelot's line when the Shagohod cuts him off at the end of his pursuit and he's just like, "Son of a bitch!"
Yeah.
And it's like the first time you see him like really lose his cool, and then Volgan is just like glancing back at him with a really coy smile on his face. It's just beautiful. I just love it.
It's so good. It's so true. And Chris, I'll call you in just because we did mm-hmm. overlook a pretty glaring 2001 reference.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
in the Volgan fight, it is
what
it is dead on.
Yeah,
and you want to do the line because it's absolutely it has to be right. It has to be a 2001 reference.
Because like that's a big movie that Kojima's into, right?
Yes,
but like.
Oh.
In between the two sections, Ocelot's like, "Sorry, Colonel, I'm afraid I can't do that."
It's so good.
And if said with just a slightly different register and a little more monotone, holy shit, okay.
Yeah.
I completely glossed over that.
Yeah, we meant to call it out. Like, we're like, there's at least one more 2001 reference in this game.
I think
that's the one we were talking about.
Yeah,
we were
I think the big picture of Dollywood I have in here is distracting me from that note. But
it totally did distract me a little bit. Please. And I can't wait to hear why that comes up.
Well, it's just
it's the butterfly, yeah.
But
I see, okay.
You know.
What's the first Space Odyssey reference? What did I miss?
Well, I don't know if we were saying there was already one. It might have been how something looked. I think it was just that we were calling out like Twin Peaks, and we were saying that there was a glaring 2001 reference we wanted to call out a couple episodes back when we got to it.
We're here now. Okay, so there wasn't some fucking monolith somewhere that I missed.
Oh, God, that would have been amazing. I don't think so, though.
Okay.
Holy shit, that would have been amazing.
All right, sorry, Chris. Rail shooting time. What's up?
Rail shooting is interesting. Let's see. Are we talking about the rail shooting where you're in the forest or rail shooting where...
You can basically walk us all the way through before it's an actual boss fight.
Like with the Shagohod?
Correct.
Okay. So let me get to my notes here. All right. Let me start this off with a Russian lesson. A Russian lesson.
With Chris.
Chris's Russian lessons here. but Shagohod is like literally two words. It's pretty formally translated as a walker, right? So like someone mm-hmm. who walks. If you separate the words into like two things, Shag means step and Ohad means a konja, which is like to take leave, farewell. So if you put it together, Shagohod means step to your farewell.
Oh shit.
Yeah, that's fucking deep.
Also, this like design of the Shagohod totally, I came across this thing on a Reddit thread that was a derelict Soviet ground plane. It's called a Bartini Berev I think it's a VVA-14, but it totally looks like a Shaco HUD.
It does.
It really does.
Yeah. And they're like flying tanks or something like that. I don't know, but it's interesting how I think they... We had this little mystery right before where I was playing through the game a bit while we were chatting, and we're like, oh, I wonder if that is the design. And then like I saw it in the game, that plane, right? Mm-hmm. As you're
so crazy.
Being chased down the runway. It's the same exact plane. And I shit you not, man. The Shaco HUD hits it and it flips over and it looks exactly like this picture in our show notes. It's crazy.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, by the way, patrons to the show get access to our show notes, do they not?
Oh yeah, they do. Give us a dollar if you want to read these, or you can give us some more money too. And
it's a bunch of other cool
we
shit.
We have merch now.
Patreon.
So shameless plug.
You can get a Life of Toby hoodie if you are a $50 Patreon for 3 months, and Patreon will just mail it to you. Or you can get a Toby Gear Mondays mug,
yep,
featuring our favorite patron, who is an MMA fighter, or a former MMA fighter, I believe.
Right.
Toby from Denmark. Hi, Toby. So,
hey, Tobe.
Yeah, I don't know if we're allowed to play favorites, but hey, Toby.
Yeah, hey, buddy.
He's earned a shout out. He's got merch now. Come on.
He's
earned a shout out.
And these mugs look really badass. You can go and check them out, but you can get one of those if you're a Patreon at the $25 level for 3 months consecutively.
Right. And it's just free. Yeah, free merch. Yeah.
Or you get a free sticker if you're a Patreon at the $10 level for 3 months. So
nice.
You know, if you do it now, it'll be here like
Christmas time.
Yeah.
Perfect. Plus all of those tiers earn you a lot of extra content and access to interactions with the hosts.
Hell yeah.
So, you know,
what a great segue into an
chime in, baby.
Onward and onto the show.
So now we are at a boss fight. Essentially.
Yep.
And so we know that Volgan did not die. He's in the Shaco HUD. He's been chasing you down like a madman.
In the Shaco HUD.
Step to your end.
And Volgan, you could obviously.
Is a baby boy in the Shaco
you could slow him down with an RPG to the treads, which we made sure Chris knew that strat.
Oh, yeah. They were helping me out while I was playing this.
You sort of get to like a clearing, and it's just you on like a helipad, I guess, or like a Harrier jet would leave from there if it was the right timeline. He plants himself there, and it's you versus him. So you and Eva, you're in the sidecar, and you just go to town on him. I mean, the obvious strat as you're learning is you just RPG those little treads. I can't move. And then you do your thing and just keep trekking at it.
I can't move.
Did anybody struggle with at least this phase of the fight?
Nah, man. As Alex H. on the voice channel said, this is one of the easier battles in the game, as I think it should be. And we were talking about this in the pre-show, and I said I'd get to this later. I think it's supposed to be easier because, obviously, as we found out from previous cutscenes, this is the inferior model. I don't think this one was supposed to be a really difficult battle because, you know, you've just gone through the battle with Volgan, and then you know you have this battle with the Shaco HUD coming, and then you know you have a battle with the boss coming. I think this one was intentionally designed to be a little simpler than the mech battles in the previous games.
Sure. Yeah. Especially since its main thing is that it could go fast.
Right.
Like that was why it was designed. It was like it was basically this one can get done quicker. So we're going to put all our assets into making this so that we can be a threat more immediately than with Granon's model. But Granon's model may have had more staying power. And maybe we'll learn about that in a little bit. So after I was able to do maximum damage. You shoot him in the treads, you pop him in the top. And then out of nowhere, this motherfucker has a phase 3. He bursts out of the top. He like grabs like the wiring and just wire, like he runs this motherfucker by himself. Yep. And now you're going against Volgan literally being, it's like he's his arms and puppeteer. Yeah, he's an extension of the machine.
And he's using his electricity to like give it directions and shit. It's wild.
Right. And I love the idea of, it's another little moment with Snake and Eva, right? He's saying like, you know, you go, and she's like, no, I got you. Like, I'll distract him. You take this fucker out, right? So I love that little moment, and it's another little mini phase of this boss fight, but it's great. You do the same exact routine. I just popped him in the treads, pulled out the old Mosin Nagant, and just headshotted that motherfucker.
Got him.
And it was like four shots, done, call it a day. Here's a coffee.
Dun, dun, dun.
Here's a coffee, if only.
Yeah.
Snake could use a coffee at this point.
And I put, finally, this asshole is dead. Or is he?
Yeah, but I do want to say, as far as the he's dead or is he part, the one time this guy doesn't say Kuwabara, Kuwabara.
Yeah, well.
True.
Yeah, he gets struck by lightning.
Yeah, we keep glossing over like certain things. There's the bridge moment where you can snipe the the C4 to blow it up. That's how you get to the boss arena, because you're supposed to get him, and he climbs up, literally like drills his way through. It's pretty impressive.
I don't know
great
about you
scene.
Guys. I feel like that would have been okay. As much as I love sniping and using the scope, and any chance I get to pull out that SVD, I'm in some sort of heaven. But I feel like I would have been okay with that part as a cutscene. I just didn't think it was necessary as a quick time event.
I didn't mind it because it didn't feel like a quick time event. You were waiting for it to be there, so for her to be like, shoot it, you know. I don't know. I kind of liked it. Very Saving Private Ryan of it.
I thought it was okay. I mean, it's not super difficult or interruptive to the gameplay.
No, but it's just, it's another one of those where they release you to play for a minute and a half, and then you have more cutscene. And like, at that point, I'd just as soon keep going with the cutscene, you know?
My general problem with this portion of the game starts with like the Volgan fight and goes through, I think, basically up until you're sneaking through the forest later on. But it's basically, this is like scripted rail shooter on rails, boss fight, chase sequence, boss fight, chase sequence, that sort of thing. And you keep having to pause the motherfucking game and pull bullets out of you and apply ointment and stuff. And it's like, hold on, timeout. And you just kneel on the battlefield and like do this stuff, and it pauses in real time. It really disrupts the flow of the game. And I think the climax, and it's not needed here. You know, I feel like when you're on the bike, you know, they have the map blacked out in the menu.
Right.
And I think here during the sequence, you could have just blacked out this cure thing because it, and like when it's reintroduced later on, it's a little more impactful, I think, if you would do it that way.
Sure. Well, they may as well have blacked it out for all I cared, because I took a similar approach to this that I did.
Were you just like, fuck it?
I mean, I don't really have time to be doing that right now. In fact, I got run over by Eva on her bike and Volgan in the Shagohod like three times. Embarrassingly, like three times ish. And I was just like, fuck it. The show must go on, I guess. During boss battles, I rarely have the clarity of mind to be like, oh, I should check my health. I just, if I don't get it done within my health bar, I don't get it done, you know?
Right. And this is where I start to feel, at least this section overstays its welcome, because you're thinking, all right, we got it going. You're about to have your little moment, and Snake gets cock-blocked by more hover guards on their little hovercraft things. And then you have a whole nother section where you got to shoot them down. Then you got to shoot the logs so you can get through. Then you got to keep shooting guards. It just felt like 8 extra minutes that didn't need to be there.
For
real. Love the idea. I didn't need the woods part. I really didn't. But I get why it's there, because you have to crash to get you to the lake, right?
I guess. I feel like this could have been a cutscene. I know that most people hate the Eva escort piece of the game most. I hate this part most.
Yeah, agreed.
I can deal with escorting Eva. You just got to feed a bitch and keep telling her to fucking come on.
Gotta
follow
feed
me.
A bitch. Okay.
She a hungry bitch. We'll get there. But you just gotta keep feeding her for that. But this whole thing with shooting down all the hovercrafts the whole time, and they're on your left, they're on your right, they're behind you, they're in front of you. Oh, God, I hate it. Hate it.
Mm.
Yeah, it really fucking sucks, I'll tell you that.
Is that where you're at right now?
Yeah, sneaking through the forest.
Yeah, I'm not so really now we are
through the forest.
Right, so now we are there, right?
Yeah.
We crash. We crash the bike because we were trying to get away, and we basically fall in. The bike's trashed. You know, you're a little roughed up, and you learn that Eva basically was run through by a part of a log or something, or a part of a tree.
A branch, and, gnarly branch that is coming out of a downed tree stump.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I got to say, I definitely felt for her. I was like, fuck, like, is she gonna die? Like, she's done, right? It's over. I was a little bummed out about that. But then, of course, like, so paramedic is a little bit of a cold-hearted bitch, right? She's just like, you better take care of yourself first, you know? But I do love their little banter, because you have, you know, what I referenced in the beginning was, I need you. And she's like, can you say that again? I need you. It felt genuine. And I know you're about to say a certain thing. I almost thought it was playful. So, like, I can't fly the wig by myself, right? He needs her to fly the plane. I still felt like it was a little campy. I think he still meant he needed her to. I thought it was both.
Sure, but he's too proud to admit something like that. And that's very much how I took this. It was, he's right up on the precipice of saying it, of really expressing an emotion to her. But then he remembers himself. He remembers his mission. He remembers why he's here. And, you know, he can't quite say it. And it's just, it's a funny moment, but what punctuates this for me, even if that was playful banter back and forth, what happens next is just a little bit like, damn, Snake, really? Because then she's like, oh, okay, haha, well, I guess I better go on then, and proceeds to push herself out of the branch that's impaling her without, like, he just stands there and watches.
Yes.
She's like, okay, true. Good luck, I guess.
Just fucking, I'm going to stand up.
Yeah.
It's just like, first you made her think that you needed her and then denied her so immediately. And she laughs it off, sure. She's a good sport about it. But then you just watch her, like, pull herself out of that situation. Come on, Snake.
I loved it. I think it was her way of, like, getting a little bit more of making sure he took care of her, like, so that she can complete her mission, if I had to be, you know, picky now.
What do you mean? Can you expand on,
like,
that?
Like, so she knows that she'll probably survive if she gets up to follow him, right? Because she now has Snake in her pocket. So I think that if she also is getting some sort of emotion from him, but then also she's obviously compromised, but if she does her best to stick with him, he's going to make sure she's okay. Even though the game is also making sure that. But I think it's part of her, because we're going to learn pretty quickly that she has other motives.
Right.
But she's also doing the right thing, you know, on both fronts. We'll get there.
Okay.
But I do love the contrast here. I thought there was a bit of a pacing issue because I did not need all that rail shooting, as much of it as there was. But I actually don't mind at all the escort mission.
Yeah, it almost kind of reminded me of like a slot machine or a pachinko machine.
Oh, God. Why would you say that word, Chris?
You know I had to go there.
That's true. That's true.
I do have some Russian translations for these for last two areas.
So
the rail shooter where you're in the forest, that is called Lazarevo, which is Serbian, and that's the name of a city. And it means land of Lazarus. Like,
I see that.
Someone who comes back from the dead. And, you know, I think of like our boss fight with Volgan, you know, there's this scene of like where he's on fire. He's like truly a man on fire, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe. I wonder what they'll do with that.
Yeah.
But
tune in.
This shitty little escort mission area here, Zazorievo, it means beyond the beast.
Ooh. Okay. I like that. I like how on the nose they are when you translate them. That's actually really cool. I did make a mention too, I love the music that I did not remember, like, just through all of this, the everything all the way through, like, right when we get to this. Now, when we get to the escort part, I didn't have too much trouble. Basically, I had an idea that, like, they were coming, like, there's, like, what, 15 guys, it feels like, but I mean, maybe it's probably more like 6 or 7, but there's like a whole platoon coming after you. I ran to that big log. It's like right when you're on your way through, made sure Eva was, you know, come on, come on. And she meets me there. What I liked is when you go prone, she goes prone. So you don't have to command her to do anything. She fought. So if you're running, she's going to try and pick up the pace. If you slow down, she slows down on her own. And if you go prone, she will hide in those, you know, that high grass until the sun rises, unless I move. And I basically waited for them to pass me and then just slowly followed them. And then once I felt like I had an opportunity where it would take them a while to find me if I had to, I just, you know, 22, 22, 22, just popped them all and they all went petty buys. And then I had to feed Eva a lot, but I made sure that girl got the best damn noodles that money could buy.
You were nice.
I was super invested in Eva. I'm not kidding. Like at this point, I didn't realize what's going to happen at the end of the game. I was absolutely invested in Eva at this point. I was like, Snake is going to get his girl.
You were a smitten kitten.
I really was. She got me. She was the honeypot. So did anybody else struggle with this? Was there any? I really didn't have any. And we'll get to the next part of this little escort mission. But this first batch of maps, was there any struggle there?
No struggle. Just that she a hungry girl. It feels like she can't move 50 yards without emptying her goddamn stomach.
It's true. I mean, she's literally leaking out of her stomach from that.
Okay, fair. Wound. All right, Warren. Way to make sense.
Fair point.
One thing I did note was I just remembered at this point in the game when Snake is speaking to Eva, when she's trying to get him to open up a little bit, she says, "Isn't there anyone you care about, Snake?" And he says, "I never really cared about anyone else's lives." And then here you are at the end of the game literally having to care about her life and making sure she doesn't die and feeding her and giving her meds when she needs them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was an interesting callback. I mean, it wasn't even something that the game hinted at during this moment. It was just something that came to mind. I was like, oh, cool. Full circle.
Yeah, great. It felt like very logical and like proper progression of a relationship between two characters.
Right.
It really felt natural. It didn't feel forced. That's the one thing that I'm giving credit to the last part of this game is you had your whole thing of misadventures, right, with this girl, and now like her life is in your hands.
Right.
And I like genuinely was like, fuck yeah. Like it felt right to actually defend her and protect her and fuck up these guards and get to the lake that you're trying to get to.
And an interesting comparison note for, again, this is a little bit early to be bringing this up, but for Solid Snake, because he utters a line or two like that in his time too. But he has a little bit of a different experience.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm trying to follow. I want to move to the next part, but I don't want to ruin a plot point or I guess a gameplay bit for you, Chris, if you're right where you are.
Right now, I'm currently lost in these woods trying to find my way out of here. Like I feel like I just walked in a big circle.
You may have. Both maps have the ability to be a circle. So just find yourself.
Are you looking at the map with your destination marked?
I mean,
mean on your start menu.
Oh. Yeah. Sorry, I'm old.
No, you're going about this the natural way.
I'm literally looking at a map right now where you are. So the only reason why I say that is because you're going to get to a part where you have guards hidden in the tall grass.
Yes, yeah,
you have to know they're there or you will be ambushed.
I got so lucky here, too. I just, my natural instinct to be alert and sneaky and throw on my thermal goggles just, hit at this moment. And I was so glad it did because it allowed me to be a little snipey boy for a minute.
Nice. Yeah, I got lucky. I don't know if I saw one or what, but I got down and I was doing my normal sort of like, oh, I'm going to hide by this tree, you know, right? Like, I'm not just going to run down the path because I'm expecting something to come just because I know Kojima. And you, see the grass move, and I thought it was a snake, and it's one of them. I could see his head, and I was like, you motherfucker. And then I shot one. And the other, three or four were like, what? And then you can see that they're all there. And I was like, mother fucking Kojima.
Right?
Like, this son of a bitch really tried to make, like, the last fucking map that isn't the fucking final boss fight, like, an its
He's
own little
so
mini
mean.
Thing.
He's
it was
so mean.
It was a good idea. It was the one, like, right in the middle. Like, it wasn't, like, off to the side. I just was like, oh, this fucker's, like, that's a guy. Like, I see him.
And well, the fortunate thing about this is once you shoot one of them and alert the others, they don't get up like I thought they would.
Right.
Like, I unequipped my SVD and was preparing to have a duel where I threw down some guards. But no, they just stay there in their position and you go, oh, okay.
Oh,
pop.
I'll just kill you too. Yeah.
Pop.
Oh, I love
anyway,
it.
Anyway, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oops. Maybe spoiled some stuff.
No, I know about all of this.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah. Okay.
This isn't my first Metal Gear Solid 3 playthrough.
I'm trying to slowly walk him into this. So now we're going to get through this part and we get to the lake.
Yep.
And now we see that beautiful wig. Eva's ready to fly that baby out of here.
She's running to it, by the way, after having just been impaled.
Let me just say,
I gave her 3 bags of beautiful fresh noodles. I would have all the energy in the world too.
Well,
I gave
okay,
her calorie mates.
Yeah, there you go, calorie mates. I just gave her back the stuff she
I
gave me.
I gave the motherfucker the Russian rations. I gave her mushrooms. She did not need my good shit.
Well, she ate well.
Yeah, she ate better than I ate the whole game, as far as I'm concerned.
Actually, I could have saved the good stuff for her because, as it turns out, Snake rarely needs to eat anything during this part.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So we have a moment between Snake and Eva one more time. Mm-hmm. And she basically says, like, I know that you have to do this. I know that you have to go fight the boss. I know. And we're going to chat about this later, Snake, when you go do the thing you need to do. And I have this labeled in my notes as the motherfucking boss.
And then this is the best moment I can interject here. He turns from talking to her and takes one step, and he's surrounded by all of these. What kind of flowers are they?
That is a great question.
I want to say lilies because they're white, but I know that's not right.
So, Chris, where are you now as far as gameplay?
Well, Eva takes forever to follow you, right?
Correct. She does. You're right. You have to. I actually had a moment where she was like, where are you?
So I'm just running through the jungle right now with these guards that are supposedly hiding, not doing a very good job of it, with the M83 machine gun. And we're just, you know, blowing everybody away.
The Wiki fandom calls these flowers white grass lilies.
Interesting.
I'm going to look that up.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It looks accurate. It looks like they are white grass lilies. So that transition from Snake talking to Eva and turning and just being surrounded by white grass lilies as he turns to face the boss, it's a fucking traumatic transition because you just, like, if you're invested at all in this point and you know what's coming, your heart just drops into your stomach at this point.
Right. There is one of two outcomes. You die or she dies. And we all know who we're playing as. So you can't win as the boss. And I gotta say, the boss is a fucking G. If she is the only person that
the OG.
Because she does go into her own soliloquy, right? She has her own monologue of what we were just mocking Vulgan about in the last couple episodes. But she talks about uniting the philosophers. I made a note that maybe that's the will of the boss.
I also noted this as being an important line of hers.
Yeah, so she talks about how she was, you know, she was in space, she saw the world, she wanted to unite it. It's a lot of what we talked about in the boss episode. So we can, you know, shave a little bit of time there where we learn about her father. We learn about that she was the last child of the philosophers. She was, you know, she found her way when it came to that. She explains how she got basically run through the mud with the CIA and she had to do everything, right? In response to all of the Vulcan shit, all of the Cold War, everything that has happened. And she has that, you know, that one moment of like, well, Snake, this is what you have to do. There is nothing more for me to give you. All that's left is for you to take my life by your own hand. One must die, one must live. No victory, no defeat. The survivor will carry on the fight. It is our destiny. The one who survives will inherit the title of the boss, and the one who inherits the title of the boss will face an existence of endless battle.
Ugh.
Like, fucking ugh. Crazy.
Mom, why?
Yeah, it's...
Why, though?
It's so good, right? It's so fucking awesome. And she is in her dope-ass sneaking suit. She pops on that Patriot and says, do what you gotta do. I've shown you everything I can. Let's fucking throw down.
Ooh, and the music changes here to a real, like, do-do-do-do-do-do. There's, right. like, some bass-heavy,
and
you know.
A lot of, and once the fight begins, there's, like, no music. It's just your sounds. You hear her, your feet, you hear your feet.
Yes, it's very
subtle. And it's really awesome sound design. And you hear the wind blowing through, right? I love that. Now,
and you hear every grunt of hers.
Right, exactly. Now, a fun fact is if you look for them, there are three white snakes in this field. And when the time comes, because obviously you can't check right away, but you, when you can, they're literally called Liquid Snake, Solid Snake, and Solidus Snake. Those are the
so
names
weird.
Of the snakes, which is very interesting, very cool. And we'll get to those. I mean, we're going to get the Solidus a long time from now. But so this boss fight is fucking dope. I love this boss fight. Did you have any struggle, Tori, with this fight at all as far as how to do
ask
it, how
Toby.
To do it? So
I don't know. Toby, did I have any struggle with this?
He's screaming at his stuff. Yeah, so go ahead. So what was your biggest struggle?
Well, my strategy. I mean, as it turns out, for every boss battle. Plus, I will just say I had some unfair pressures from one Toby from the Discord. And as soon as he said that I had to beat the boss before he went to bed, I just knew it was going to take me forever.
Oh, no.
So
a watch pot never boils.
Right. Toby went to bed disappointed, and, you know, there's nothing I can do about that.
It's a long fight.
If you don't know what you're doing, it does take a while. And I would say my experience was good. It still was a long fight. Oh, yeah, she claims, right? She says you have 10 minutes to...
Before Migs bomb the hell
right,
out of
so
this
if
place.
So if you don't fight me, we're all going to die. And this was all for fucking nothing, right?
Awesome.
So they're already adding like another layer of tension to
right.
what's going
again,
on.
Again, with the time limit, if it wigs me out, no pun intended, but I do tend to get a little frantic in my play style whenever there's a time added. Fortunately, once again, I had one Alex H. on the voice call with me, and he threw me some awesome CQC tips, specifically how to counter the boss's CQC,
yep.
which is something that I always just kind of accidentally fell into. Mm-hmm. Whenever it happened, it was because I didn't mean to, and it just did. But there's a very specific timing to all of this. You
right.
have to be patient,
yes.
and you have to wait for the right moment, which is a thing that I apparently am still learning throughout this game, even up until the very end.
Yeah, this is a very different fight for me ever since Dark Souls came out.
Oh, sure. Oh,
so
we could,
this
oh,
is a,
let's
this
talk.
Is a,
you know what?
This is a pre-Dark Souls fight, you know, when I first played it. But now I am trained to not tell the game how I play. The game tells me how to play it.
Right. Yes.
And that's
yeah,
a big
so
one for me.
Speaking of Patriot Club potential topics.
Yeah, Dark Souls? Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of Dark Souls fans, don't we?
Yeah, we do. So in this fight, what I love about it is if you get that counter, right, and you get a couple of good hits on her, she, like, commends you in the
yes,
fight.
Yes, like, you've grown stronger.
It's so, like, it gets sadder and sadder. Like,
right.
It's a really cool fight, though. And when you finally win, you finally...
It's bittersweet, man.
You exhaust the battle, and she just lays there.
Yep.
And... You have the chat with her, and she basically...
The birds and the bees chat.
The legacy
Jack,
chat.
Before I die, there's something you should know.
Check out my sweet rack with my scar.
What? No. No. This is mother and son, Warren, you
said
dirty
birds
bird.
You said birds and the bees.
Yeah, well, I mean, all right. All right.
I had to counter it. So... I don't know if this is true. I could be completely wrong. she opens up and she talks about the scar, right? She makes a mention that my body and my, what was it? My body and my soul or whatever was taken for battle. There's nothing left for me in this world, right? She draws down her scar that she said they took her child. And she mentions that she still feels the pain like a snake going
slithering
through her.
Down.
Does it's she rumored,
feel the pain?
Yes, there it
the
is.
The pain.
So it's rumored
grenade.
That,
sorry.
That might have been how Snake got his code name. Is that pain that she feels? Is that it's rumored? It's not confirmed, but how that might have been how they gave him the name Snake.
Yeah, I'd heard that. I'd heard that that was a possible explanation in addition to the fact that he was going to be facing the Cobra unit.
Right.
That so is interesting.
You get the legacy from her. You mm-hmm. get her gun, her sweet-ass gun, the Patriot.
Sweet-ass gun.
And I made a mention here, if I'm not, I hope I'm correct, but it's the first time she legitimately calls you Snake after everything is done. She's always called you Jack.
That's true.
In the game. So it's the first yeah. time she calls you Snake, so you are owning it, and she kind of pulls like a Sith rumor here of like, there's only room for one boss and one Snake. And it's like, oh.
And Snake, at this point, is in quotes, right? If you have the captions up.
Correct. Yeah, there'd only be one boss and one Snake, quote. Mm-hmm. Correct. Now, she asks you, there's only one thing left to do.
Yeah. Can I interject something here?
Absolutely.
Please, for the love of God.
Break interrupt. The fucking tension.
Yeah, for sure. So, Russian lesson.
Yes. Russian for death is?
Russian lesson. This is Rokovy Bereg, which means fatal shore.
Oh, of course it does.
Or Lake of Destiny.
Ooh, they're both good.
Yeah.
Two great band names.
Fuck yeah. Or at least a good band name and a good album title for that band.
Okay, sure.
So she says you got to do one final thing and you have to take the shot.
You have to press her. F to pay
yeah,
respects.
Press F. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I have never taken the shot. I've never pressed the button.
Really?
Listen, Warren. Something you have to know about me. I'm a very impatient person.
Okay. Well, they don't tell you. Like, they don't like say press R1, at least for me it was an R trigger. They don't say it, right? You just sort of have to understand. You notice like the widescreen bars sort of disappear. Mm-hmm. You realize it's not a cutscene. You have to like something's supposed to be happening right now. And I'll tell you right now, I've only beaten the game probably two or three times. I've played it a shit ton, but not completed it all the way through. I've never actually pulled the trigger.
Never.
And unfortunately, guys, there's a ticking clock that we're going to get, you know, MIG bombed. So it takes the shot for you and you kill the boss and the boss is dead.
Damn.
And I've never felt grosser. Fucking hate everything about this. Everything. And then the horse comes over like, Mama? And I feel even fucking worse. It's awful. And when you fire the shot, all of the flowers turn red. Right? Really fucking cool cinematography. Really awesome. The music is fucking incredible. It's such a great final fight to what may be one of the best endings in a video game, right?
You think so?
I think that's easy to say. I normally have like a fluid list, but this is always in the conversation of best last half hours of a game ever. As long as you are in context for why, you know, why this boss battle is important, right? You can't just watch it and be like, oh, that's cool. Wait, you've earned it.
Who's the
through
boss?
The game.
God damn okay. it.
What's going on here?
Chris, right, what are you podcast. Doing over there, bud? What are you watching
almost
TV?
Made it a full, we almost made it a full season, you guys, and then there's this shit.
Chris has been watching Rick and Morty every time we do an episode. I can't believe he's gotten this far.
basically.
The boss is a very important character. I don't want to break your flow here, Chris, but we like the boss
right now.
Fuck yeah, you are.
Fuck yeah.
How are you doing? Is she owning you right now?
I'm doing pretty good, but she's pretty beefy. Her health bar is no joke.
Oh yeah, she's like a full where your stamina is like that's her health. Yeah, she's a G-man. She's too good.
She's a G-man.
Oh shit. So we win the battle. She's dead. We fucking hate everything about our lives. We get back. Ava has the plane ready to go. Let's get the fuck out of Dodge, right? We are flying off into the sunset, and we're just about to... And then fucking Ocelot shows up on a hover. The stupid fucking hover things. I don't know if I like these things at all in the game. They're really stupid. But you had to believe that Ocelot was going to, you know, fuck your shit up. He's going to try. And it's really dumb, and I hate it, until he gets into the plane. Once Ocelot's in the plane, I fucking love this scene. I love the fight. I love when Ocelot fucking pokes Snake in the face in his eye that isn't there anymore, and he just like, like he just like fucking laughs it off. It's
that
so
creepy
good.
Laugh of his.
Yeah, and I do love that we basically learn like how Ocelot's always had like that Shooter McGavin thing. It's actually like his fight stance. That's actually what he does to fight. And
Ocelot says, I eat pieces of shit with you for breakfast.
We're not going to Sizzler. And I love the fight. The fight's really cool. I love the idea of it's very James Bond fighting in the back of a cargo plane. And I do love the, you know, what's your name? Right? And he goes, Snake. And he's like, no. You're not a snake. I'm not an Ocelot. You know, let's go here. And it's...
We're men.
Yeah.
With names.
And my name is Adamska.
Adamska.
And mine is John. Oh, it's so good. So, it is very funny. I made a note. It's amazing that the game has time for this. So, he does his own... Takes the bullet off of his necklace. Puts it in one gun. Flips it. Does his little Russian roulette routine. But instead of doing what he normally does... He drops both guns down and allows Snake to pick the gun. And it'll be a battle of whoever can shoot each other faster, but only one of them has the bullet, right? What I didn't need was that it looks like the gameplay where you have to make your decision of the left gun or the right gun. Why isn't it just guns? Why is it the spinning ammo boxes that are in the gameplay? I felt like that kind of took me out of the cutscene a tiny, tiny bit.
The whole thing takes you out of it. I mean, again, this is another place that could have been just cutscene. I would have been okay without having to make that choice myself.
Yeah, or even just Snake's hand, right? And you just hit left or right on the keyboard.
Sure.
Something simple.
I don't know. This is just, I appreciate Kojima wanting to give the player extra opportunities here to engage at the end of this, like, hour-long ending, but some of them just felt unnecessary.
Sure.
You know?
Now, you pick a gun, and you basically, it's like a straight-up first-person shooter. You just see your Colt single-action army, and you're just shooting as fast as you can to get through your six bullets.
Click, 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 click,
now,
click, click.
Do you remember which one you picked?
Always the left one.
Okay, I picked the right one.
Oh.
So, how did your battle end?
So, when you pick the left one, and... As long as you shoot faster than Ocelot. Actually, I think he could keep clicking because his would be empty.
Right.
You eventually have the shell ready to be in the be shot through chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And when it fires, it starts the cutscene and it's a blank. So you fire at him, Ocelot clutches his chest and then pats his chest for a couple seconds and goes, ha ha, it's a blank.
Of course it is.
And as for the right?
I still think it was a blank. That bullet's never supposed to fucking work. Because that's
exactly.
He does the same thing in the tunnel, right? In the drain tunnel where he wants to put the single bullet in. Like, yep. So there's something more to fucking Adamska. This fucker. Now I picked the one on the right. Yeah, sorry. So I picked the one on the right and he shoots you, and Snake sort of like flinches and then realizes mm-hmm. nothing happened, and he does the same. It's a blank.
So we know it's a blank no matter what. That right. bullet is always a blank.
Correct.
But is that Ocelot's doing, or is that just Kojima's doing?
I think it's Ocelot's doing, because he's aware that he can't kill Snake.
Interesting. See, I always took it as this was just the way that it was always going to go. He's kept that bullet this whole time, and it's hard for me to believe he would keep that bullet knowing full well it's a blank, because he's so, on the one hand, he's enamored with Snake and very much respects and maybe even potentially idolizes him at this point. On the other hand, he very much wants to best him. He wants to come out on top, and that's why he saves one bullet for him, because this is my last chance. And he wants to leave it up to fate, just like he did with Sokolov.
Sure. Okay. I could see that. I just got the feeling that, because I the only thing I'll disagree with is the only time I've seen him use that bullet were those two times I talked about. And I think he just puts a blank on a necklace for whenever it makes like use for him to get his point across, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
So I could be wrong, but that's how I always took it, was that the cahoots that they had, like the boss is one of those people that she'll say a thing and people just fucking listen. And she told Eva, you can't kill Snake. And she told Ocelot, you can't kill Snake. I think that's what it was. And what Ocelot wanted to know was if he was allowed to kill him, would he have won or not? I think that's what it is. That's my interpretation of it.
See, I never took it that way. I always thought that one bullet he was saving was the one bullet that he tried to eject by hand and it backfired on him. And he held on to that as a memento.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I guess they're both totally valid understandings of that. Like, there's nothing that says otherwise, you know, who would be more or less correct in that circumstance.
Right. Because it didn't happen that way. It was always going to be a blank.
Exactly. So, generic action movie stuff after this. Basically, Ocelot jumps out of the plane like, later. I don't know how he survives that, but whatever. Let him do his thing.
Oh, wait. There's a touching little moment that I just want to make note of, because Ocelot, in this very brotherly way, just kind of takes his fist and he just kind of taps it or thumps it on Snake's chest.
Sure. Oh, yeah. It's like a bro shake without shaking.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's just kind of, it's cute, because he's obviously very amused in this moment. He goes, that was fun.
Yeah.
And then just kind of thump. Later, peace. I'm going to jump out this plane.
So funny. But then, of course, doesn't Eva do that stupid, I told you could trust me.
Oh, and that was before Ocelot even boards.
Okay, as soon as she says that, I'm like, fuck, I can't trust her. It's so obvious at that point. I'm like, fucking damn it.
Yeah, like, nobody who says that really means it.
Yeah, exactly. So, generic action movie stuff. We fly over. We don't see it, at least I didn't see it, and I tried to look a couple times. You don't see the boss's corpse, but you know you're flying over it, right? Mm-hmm. You see the horse, though. And I've kind of put, like, I guess the horse is okay. Like, the horse will just figure out what to do.
Do we not see that horse later on?
Ooh, maybe we do. Oh, no. You'll have to school me on that. Or a different game? Well, are you saying a different game or in this later in this?
Another game.
Okay, then yes. Then you can school me in that later.
Okay.
So the MiGs show up.
Oh, yeah.
And Khrushchev.
Time.
Yeah. Khrushchev, which we learned about during the torture scene, that basically Khrushchev is trying to, like, also make sure this doesn't happen because he just doesn't trust America at this point. And what's nice is I do like it's, again, it's a little generic action movie, but they get called off just in the nick of time, right? So that you can fly out. One of your engines was busted by Ocelot. Like, who knows if you can pull this up? But Eva and Snake do share another moment in the plane, like while everything's going. And it really felt like genuine character development between these two. I totally believed it. Major Zero chimes in, gives you the old, you know, attaboy. Way to win the game, Snake, right? He just gives you
now
the old.
Get back here as fast as you can.
Exactly. And call me in the morning. And you get one chance for a final save.
Yep.
And you're going to need it. If you don't take it, this is on you.
You have to do all that shit again.
Because you're going to be sitting for a minute.
Now, how we doing, Chris? Are we well ahead of you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm still stuck on the boss.
Oh, sorry, of course, dude.
But I'm just getting through the gameplay at this point. I have seen the story. I know what the story is. So I,
sure,
and I have notes on that. I'm prepared to engage in that.
Do you have anything to add to the boss fight though?
Yeah. Fuck this boss fight. Let me just say, it's kind of bullshit that I have to GM do the thing, the dance of like pausing the menu and healing myself and doing all the
Chris, again.
The gunshot wounds are again, the worst because you have to do
that strategy
four
down.
Different things and you have to remember or you have to like exit the menu. And
can I give you a little breakdown of what I did? Not to say that you should do it any one way, but
please do.
Okay, so I would have the M63 or X16, M whatever, or AK-47, whatever rapid firepower I had access to. And as I was running to her, I would be shooting her, and just about as I was getting to her, I would quickly unequip it, because if you leave it equipped, she will break it apart and throw it away in pieces, right? Mm-hmm. So I would quickly unequip it and engage in CQC with her. And this is the part where the timing is everything, because you have to wait until she's already like starting her CQC to be able to interrupt her. So if that didn't work and she threw me to the ground, I would let her take her croc shot at me. And then I would, in the middle of it, run up to her and CQC her. And there's usually a little window there where you can interrupt her and then kick her to the ground and take your shot. And then after that, I would start all over again. I'd run away from her and pull out my automatic weapon and just keep popping at her until I ran close enough to be within CQC range. Because sometimes, if you're lucky, while she's shooting at you with the Patriot, and if you get it lined up just right, you can interrupt her from her shooting as you're firing away at her. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then the only thing I'll add is if you do non-lethal her before the, you know, the actual kill shot, you get the snake camo. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty dope. It's actually just a really good camo. It's like as good as maybe not the fears, just because that one is there, but it almost always has like 75 to 80% no matter what you're doing, which is great.
Oh, but the fears drains your stamina like crazy.
Exactly.
Though.
So it's basically worth wearing this one.
Yeah.
So now we are at the ending of the game. We have the
last
the big cutscene.
No more. Fuck it.
All right.
Yeah, join us, Chris.
Fuck this game.
I love
game.
How these last two eps have been running long, but I'm ready for this.
Fuck this shit. You want to talk about the boss?
Yeah.
That's a bullshit rush that she does. I've got no fucking ammo on anything, so I'm having to switch between all of the guns, and for some reason I'll have like 30 bullets, and then like I'll shoot her with a gun and they'll all be gone. And then I'll have like four bullets in a machine gun and I have to switch to that thing.
Oof.
Like, this is like some bullshit survival mechanics. You know, I don't remember any boss fight in this franchise being this difficult.
Really?
I think I agree with that, except for maybe some in Metal Gear Solid 4. I think some of those get a little tricky like this too, but up to this point, this is without a doubt for me the most difficult boss fight.
I had a really easy time with all the bosses in 4.
The only thing that comes to mind that's tough for me was like the quiet fight in 5.
Oh,
or
you
maybe
guys
one
will have
the,
to reserve comments for that.
Yeah, or like
I
the XOF fight. There's some cool shit in there that I think was tough. But I think the big thing was is you have a choice to like evade those completely. This you can't walk away from. So now we're going to talk one of my favorite endings to a video game ever. So part one, I got to say, this is the dream, right? We have Snake and Eva chilling in some cabin. There's a big old fireplace, a bear rug there. There's probably a double quilted leather door somewhere in that building. With like a hidden passage or something, right? And I love it. They're having a genuine moment. Snake goes in for the move. Everything's going great. The music's fucking like real sultry, feeling good. And I think they finally, you know, have a great time. And we find out Snake has been had. And
Eva has
been too damn good.
The boss would say she's disappointed.
Yeah. However, she did exactly what the boss asked her to do, at least as far as Snake is concerned. So Eva gives a long goodbye through a recording. Mm-hmm. Snake wakes up alone and he finds out Eva's gone, and we basically learn that she was never Russian, never a Russian spy, never a code breaker. She's been a spy for China as an agent of the Philosopher's Legacy, or at least of the Philosophers. They wanted to know what was up with Volgan, so they sent her in, and we learn that there was never a female Eva codebreaker. Eva was a man, and that she would have killed Adam if Adam had showed up at Rosviet. Well, holy shit.
Adam, and I always think about this because Adam does show up there. It's just not at the time you expect him.
Right.
So or what would have happened if the timing was just a little bit different? You know, how would that have gone down?
I mean, it would have been a fucking sweet-ass fight to watch Ocelot and Eva fuck each other up.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Well, it would have broken the game, too, because it would have basically negated everything
that of course.
Happens after.
And but. I love the idea that, so she would have eliminated Adam, right? And China basically wants to get caught up in the arms race. They feel like there are way too many advancements in nuclear technology that they need to get caught up. So they wanted the plans for the Shagohod, which she lied to Sokolov and said she was working for Khrushchev, when really it was for China. What I do love is she catches you up about, like, her, not her whole life, but we talked about the charm schools with the boss. She was a student of the charm schools, and the boss was one of her instructors. She basically said she could fool everybody but the boss. The boss knew right away, and the boss was able to use her because the boss could have outed her right away, right? So the boss knew that she was doing shit that was shady from almost instantly and still was able to complete her mission and use her, which
Man,
is
I love that.
Incredible.
I love that. We talk about how badass Eva is, but for the boss to know that and utilize it and manipulate the situation to work in her favor, it just, like, oh, man.
It does kind of take away from, not the mystique, but like that, holy shit, Eva is badass. She's getting this. She's getting the explosives. She's got all the keys. The boss might have just given her fucking all of that. And we have no idea, right? We have no idea if she's,
well,
you know, that
good
at all.
If it is as you say it is, the boss would have found her out before the events of Operation Snake Eater, right?
Right. She knew from jump that it wasn't Volgan's, or excuse me, it wasn't Sokolov's lover.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, she would have known that, correct. Especially because of Zero.
Right. So that surprise on Eva's face is warranted at that point, right? Because Eva, if the boss would have been one of her instructors, why is Eva surprised when the boss is like, leave everything to me?
Yeah. But I guess, yeah, it's interesting because I guess she understands that, like, it's the lesser of evils if China does get access to some of those plans, because now it's also, there's a lot at stake with the Philosopher's Legacy. We learn that there's a lot of shit going on with this, which is okay. So we're gonna keep moving through this reveal because there's a lot happening right now.
Yeah, I'll try to stop interrupting you.
So she was ordered to kill, Eva was ordered to kill everyone, including Snake, but the boss got, like, basically said, you cannot kill Snake. Snake has to live, right? And we get a lot of the truth about the boss, which, again, we can talk about it now, but we've talked all of this in full detail in the boss episode. So we know all about her past. We know all about what she needed to do, what her mission was, why she did it. The big thing was this was supposed to be like a pretty crazy op, and then Volgan shot a fucking nuclear warhead into his own country, and the boss, without even thinking, figures out how to use it to her advantage and still complete her mission, only knowing that, again, the exact same choice she had with the Sorrow, she now has for herself. Oh, and if you guys, you know about the secret R1s? Do you guys remember the secret R1s?
Mm-hmm.
After you defeat the boss, if you hold R1, it won't tell you to, but you'll see the boss and the Sorrow standing together.
Aww.
During that, it's really sweet. Like, actually,
I heard that, but I forgot to do it. I was just so
it's really
relieved.
Sweet.
By the time I beat the boss.
Yeah. So we learn all about the boss, which, again, we have talked about it, and we'll we'll start bringing this up because it's going to start getting real crazy here. We now have Snake walking into the Oval Office to be awarded for this entire mission and everything that he's done for his country. He has defeated the boss. He is given the title of Big Boss and is considered a true patriot. It's very interesting. The music is fantastic. We know everything now. The tension in this fucking room is incredible. Like, I totally side with Snake at this point. Like,
he's stone cold here.
Yeah, fuck everyone in this room. Stiff as a board. It's bullshit clap, right? It's all attaboy. It's all bullshit to him. And did you do the other Secret R1 in this scene?
Mm-hmm. I did do this
one. And you see Ocelot. It's a little obvious. I would have hoped it was more like in
the
back.
Shooter McGavin.
Yeah, I was hoping it was more like in the background. Like, you can see him through the window and it's very obvious it's him because we're going to learn a giant reveal about him too.
Well, if the background wasn't just white, a white
backdrop. Well, just like him in the window and it playing with his gun or something or doing a flip. Just anything that's obviously Ocelot that isn't just
playing with his gun like he does.
The normal. And so this cutscene is so good. I love that. He does like that awkward shake with the president. He avoids shaking hands with anybody else, and the look he gives Zero when Zero basically is saying like congrats on the mission, he doesn't want to fucking look at anyone, including Sigint, including paramedic, and they're all sort of like, oh shit, like this whole thing fucking sucks, and I fucking hate it. Mm-hmm. We get to the cemetery.
Definitely...
Yeah, go ahead. Oh yeah, Kat, let's talk about the Oval Office here.
I just want to say this is like definitely nowadays. I think I was saying this on the voice channel earlier when I was playing through it. Nowadays, I feel much more at the Oval Office than I used to. Earlier on, it was my emotion always kind of came to a head at the graveyard scene. But anymore, in the context of this year specifically and the last few in general, this scene hits a lot harder for me, and I really feel the mixture of contempt that Snake must be feeling and frustration and devastation all at the same time.
Sure.
And it's right here where my heart starts to get a little bit heavy on throughout the end of the game. And of course, you know, we've got Eva in the background doing her bit of commentary at the end of this scene and on into the next. Right. And that just adds to the whole.
Yeah. Her whole thing about the boss. All. Yeah. Just everything about it. Yeah. It's the backdrop for this entire cutscene is basically like, this fucking sucks. And it's all for you to continue, you know, what the boss had in mind, because she was going to be forever, and she had nothing left, and she was going to be forever in battle. And it's fucking tight. And Chris, we get to the cemetery.
Yep.
We're walking up, and the fucking music is so good. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. He walks up to her fucking grave.
Mm-hmm. When those drums kick in, though.
And he fucking puts the flowers down. They do like the shot, and she's talking about how this is his mission. He is a true patriot, and he fucking salutes her. And fuck, man, that is such a great fucking moment in video games. And you fucking hate everyone in the game. You literally, after all that, it still ended up being about the fucking boss, Naked Snake.
Yep.
In such a quick turn, man. It's such a great moving. The emotion is unreal. It has no business being as good as it is, and everything, even out of context, I almost feel like that scene with the music and everything, it could be out of context, still be one of the best scenes in games. It absolutely deserves to be in that conversation at all times.
Yeah.
Am I on a plateau here? Am I by myself?
No, I think you're spot on. This is like, the ending of this game is like in a pantheon of video game iconography, I think.
Yeah.
That is very exclusive, you know. And it's funny to me because like this game kind of reaches, I think, the heights of popularity for the series and acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
And from here on out, as far as like the development goes, we just have like four and Ground Zeroes and Portable Ops, Peace Walker. Those were smaller titles because they released it on handhelds and they weren't a home console thing. But like the writing, everything is just conspires here to make a wonderful video game.
Yeah. How about you, Tori? How you feel?
I just need you to know that I looked for the ending theme to cue into the episode. So.
Yeah, we have to. Oh, we have to. It's too good.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm dropping it in the notes.
The music is unreal.
Mm-hmm. How it is. It's part of what builds this moment up for me. And with, like I said earlier, with Eva giving her monologue in the background of it, and she starts to get choked up in this one moment of her explanation, and like that's at that point where I'm like, oh no, stop it! Oh, damn it!
It got me. Like I said, I put it in the Discord when I was like, this fucking moment right here is everything.
Always.
Like, I get angry. I get sad. I get like everything. I could fucking hate everything about this game to play through. Like this is more frustrating than I remember anything. But to get to that moment is so fucking worth it. And then we get the credits. The credits are coming up. And we've all played Metal Gear games before, right? So we're very well aware.
Oh, yeah.
That the game is not fucking over yet.
And not quite.
I didn't realize how much these MGS1 and MGS3 parallel each other a lot. And maybe I'll get into that when we do our wrap-up baddies episode where we talk about some of the, you know, your Evas, your big bosses. And we hear Ocelot's voice. And I don't have it in front of me, but they did do like a sort of a, hey, this is what happened. We learned that paramedic opened up her own paramedic place in the 70s. We learned that China caught up on nuclear research. Like they sort of give us the rundown about all of, you know, the Russian embassy did this, and here's what happened with all, like all these little pieces. And Ocelot is on the phone with Mr. Director, and he fucking triple agents his way through this game. So we learn not only was Ocelot Adam Adamska, he actually was a codebreaker for the CIA who defected to become a Russian soldier to gather intel from Volgan to, I guess, get his hands on the Metal Gear prototype blueprints from Granin to bring them to the CIA while also fooling Eva into getting the falsified Philosopher's Legacy.
Right. Good God.
So he not only was the true Adam, so Adam did show up to Rosviet like he was supposed to, but Eva messed with that plan, whatever his plan was. But he was able to infiltrate so many different layers and actually succeed and finishes it like in his awesome fashion was, oh yeah, I'm always at the CIA's disposal, Mr. Director. Fuck, man. What the fucking fuck? It's annoying as shit.
Fucking fuck indeed.
Yeah. But that is an awesome fucking stinger.
It's that classic like spy movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it reminds me of Inspector Gadget with the villain Claw is like, I'll get you next time.
It's so good, man. And then, it's so good.
Oh, I want to watch that show now.
Yeah. It's a great twist. And it is frustrating because you're right. We're talking about four and on, right? Like, they don't get as good as this one. Like, this is the peak as far as even if like, you're someone like me that maybe likes one better or someone like maybe likes two better. The writing alone and the parallels and the subversion that they throw in here, like it's true, just straight up tactical espionage. It fucking hits everything it needs to be. And I remember seeing this ending. I had never thought Ocelot was a Russian soldier tried and true, because we know he does some fucking crazy shit in one and two. So I'm like, well, how did this guy didn't defect then, right? Like, yeah, I guess he was with Olga and all them in MGS2, but to find out that that's a real thing. And that actually was, you know, we talk about the fanfic of the Cold War. There were two codebreakers that did defect in real times.
Right.
And I wish, the one thing I wish we knew is who was that other defector? Who is Eva? I would really like to know that. Whether it was a nobody, it'd just be nice to know who that nobody was if it was true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I suppose so.
That would be pretty fulfilling, I think, but, you know, we'll never know.
Right. And it's not a necessity. You know, it wouldn't enrich the ending anymore.
Right.
But, oh, man.
I can't say I ever wondered that very much. I always just kind of took it as, oh, that was convenient.
Yeah.
Like a lot of other things
that
in the game
convenient.
Series. Well, I mean, yeah, like, obviously she had to have done something with the Eva that was supposed to show up, but, you know, it's just one of those things that could be spelled out in the game, but doesn't really have to be if you suspend your disbelief just a little bit.
Definitely. Oh, man. Well, we can definitely go into a little bit more of this if we'd like, because we do have one more episode where we're going to talk about Eva, about Big Boss. We're definitely going to talk about Ocelot, Adamska. We haven't had our character-focused episode on these characters, and I do think it's important because we can tie in a little bit to what happens after this game, and I get the feeling we're still going to want to chat about the ending here as story and plot, as maybe not presentation as much. But
let's save that, yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's... Yeah, I like this. So, yeah, because, well, we've been really nice to you guys. You've gotten a couple longies back to back here.
Longies.
But, yeah, so that will conclude another episode of Metal Gear Monday's Revengeance. Fuck, man, we're down. MGS3 is done. As far as story, we did it, guys. So that's kind of exciting.
Yep.
Whoa.
So, absolutely, guys, we appreciate the listens. We appreciate the downloads. Wherever you find us, you can rate and review us if you have the opportunity. We'd very much appreciate it. If you want to talk to current or previous hosts, you can go to MetalGearMondays.com for the socials. If you want to go to Facebook and Instagram, we're at Metal Gear Mondays. Twitter at Metal Gear Monday. Shout out to the Patreon again. We appreciate it. Anybody in the Discord, again, for $1 a month, you can get access to the Discord. We're doing monthly game clubs. We're doing streams. We're doing a lot of different things to get in there, a shit ton of conversation, and I'd probably say it's the best way to talk to anybody that's affiliated with Metal Gear Mondays. We're on it constantly.
Hell yeah, we are.
It's such a fun little community, and we very much appreciate it. And again, if you are hovering through the Patreon, we're doing a lot of, if you are a patron for 3 months, you get free merch and things like that. So we're trying to find ways to make it worth your while outside of extra content with extra episodes and stickers and access to talk, and again, the monthly game club. We're trying to do a bunch of little things that just bring a lot more engagement to it other than just playing Metal Gear Solid 3 for a season.
Yeah.
So
if you want to have some skin in the game, you get to have a say in it. And that, I think we're pretty amenable, you know, to suggestions.
Oh,
so yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, yeah, a patron made me do a tagline for Vin Diesel as Bubsy. So yeah, I think we do what we can to appease the listeners. Chris, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, before we end here, I wanted to ask you guys a question.
Oh,
what,
no.
What was your title?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
I'm glad you asked.
Fuck,
that.
I have a screenshot.
I do
fucking
too.
Forget already.
I think mine is El Crocodillo.
El Crocodillo, and what is that?
Crocodillo.
I want to
repeat it 5 times.
Where am I? I'm pulling it up.
It's crocodile. If nobody got that, it's crocodile.
Crocodillo.
I just really like it. Chris, I'm very curious to know your kill count and also your title.
So I got Shark.
Ooh,
nice.
Yeah, you would.
Of course you did, yeah.
Sharky boy.
Let's see. I saved 12 times. I died.
With your sharp teeth.
I died 24 times. I killed 346 people.
Holy
yeah,
shit.
You did.
Fuck, Chris. That's a lot of people, dude.
I went to alert phase 71 times.
Oh, damn.
That's more than I would have thought.
Is that all you want to read off?
Well, yeah, that's about all okay. I got to say about that.
Okay. Well, I was slightly behind you with 229 kills. I say slightly. That's actually a considerable gap, but once you get up into three digits, it's like, meh. Let's see. I died 34 times. I was seriously injured 190 times, you guys.
Whoa.
Mm.
I am proud of my 24 kinds of plants and animals captured and 57 meals eaten. Snake's a hungry boy, you guys.
And you got crocodile, huh?
Crocodile.
That's amazing.
What about you, Warren?
I got... Where is it? I got elephant.
Nice.
Okay. I'd love to know what that means. Please tell me more.
So what I gathered, the reason why I got it, because I wasn't like perfect at anything. So I killed more than I needed to get like hound or Doberman or anything like that. Right. I wasn't fast enough or rabbit would have been interesting, but you have to be terrible. You have to get like so many alerts or so few. My understanding is just because I ate a lot.
How many things did you eat?
I think 93.
Damn.
Yeah. Well,
your snake was a hungrier
boy. The problem
boy.
Was is it was all the end fight. I ate so much during the end fight because of how many times I couldn't hold him up. So I just kept losing.
Shucks.
So I had to keep eating and eating. And I bet you a third of my eating was just in that fight alone.
Yeah. And he can regenerate his stamina too.
Correct.
Ugh.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But yeah, I was trying
I'm
to
so
like,
sorry, Warren.
I wanted to go for like I was trying to be good, but I only played it on normal, so I couldn't get like these, you know, super dope, like, you know, cool it would have been to get Fox, but that's not happening. I did under 25 saves, but I wasn't gonna do under 5 hours. Are you kidding me? I didn't lose that much health though. I lost a little more stamina than anything. So I might have had a chance, but I definitely used life medicine. I definitely alerted more than none. I killed 4 people. Because they were all hover guard guys. So.
Oh.
I killed 4 people.
Wait, so they do. Because you tranquilized them, right?
Yeah, they don't die, I guess, when you do that. I guess because it's moving so fast, I don't think they counted them as deaths if you trank them. I could be wrong, but that entire scene, I tranked everything. So,
oh, okay.
So, Chris, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Insta at Chris Hampton, II. You can also find me on the Discord.
What about you, Tori? Where can they find you on the internets?
You can find me pretty much everywhere at Young Neil, YNGNEIL. I also wanted to throw in there that our listener response episode will be coming up, so you can also get in touch with us, the show, at contact@metalgearmondays.com. Please send us all of your thoughts, questions, concerns, corrections, but take it easy on us if you would kindly. I think that's it.
All right. You can find me at Warren Minix on all the socials. My gamer tag is Untaggable Gamer. And if you guys fancy a listen, my band Spooky Forest, you can find us at Spooky Forest Band. Feel free to hop in and, you know, give it a listen. We'd really appreciate it. Other
it's
than that,
spooky.
I know. I really wish we don't write scary stuff though, but whatever. It's a great. I love my band's name. Otherwise, thanks again for another episode, everyone. I think it's time to let her rip, Jack.
Ooh,
got him.
Got him.